Hello and welcome to the Befuddled Podcast, a sport podcast where we cover various sports. This is the first episode of said podcast, my name is Victor and I am your host. This weekend, there was a big fight and a big card in boxing. Anthony Joshua versus Molina. It went as suspected on most of the fights. And the main event, and Joshua versus Molina, also went as most people expected. Anthony Joshua with a massive knockout. So the fight starts in round one. It's a quiet first round. Joshua is poking around with a few nice hooks. Nothing really explosive. Molina tries to hit back a couple of times. Misses a lot. I think he hit him with a couple of jabs that did nothing really. So Joshua won that round 10-9. Round 2, Joshua is again chasing Molina around the ring, trying to find the opening for him to strike in. So, and Molina is in let's not get knocked out mode. But Joshua comes in with a big left uppercut for good measure, and the round finishes 10-9 to Joshua. So that has it 20-18 in Joshua's favor. Round 3 starts. Joshua floors Molina with a huge hook to the floor. Molina slowly gets up at 8, but he should have stayed down really. And then some massive shots are taken to Molina's face right before the stoppage. You could actually see his head almost snap off his neck in the replay. The straight right that stopped the fight the second time was so powerful, you could actually hear it on the other side of the world. And the referee stopped the fight. Anthony Joshua won by TKO in the third round. Now, for anyone who watched that fight, you could tell that Molina was scared and showed Joshua too much respect. He had, to quote Birdman, he had too much respect on his name to even make the fight interesting. You could tell that Molina was considering whether he should stay down or not, and getting away with that was kind of embarrassing. Like, it was so obvious he didn't want to be in the ring, the stadium, or even that country that night. His defense was some very flawed carbon copy shoulder roll kind of thing that didn't work. Joshua, maybe it was two or three punches of Joshua that maybe didn't connect. Everything else connected. From the first jab, Molina was scared. Joshua was just too big for him. He kind of has that Mike Tyson factor that as soon as they get in the ring, the opponents shit themselves. Also, Vladimir Klitschko was in the arena and he was confirmed as Joshua's next opponent on April 29th at Wembley Stadium in London. Well, anyway, Vlad sat ringside and flirted with the camera during the fight, during the whole card. After the fight, Vlad got a hold of a mic and tried to hype up their upcoming fight. But mostly he sounded like a teacher. No, he sounded like the teacher that always told cringeworthy jokes when they should have just stayed quiet and continued teaching calculus. It would have been less cringeworthy had Klitschko serenaded Anthony Joshua with "Don't Wanna Miss a Thing." The commentators were Carl Froch and David Hay, as they usually are with Sky Sports. And you could tell that David Hay, who is in the talks around having a fight with Joshua, you could tell that his voice started to crack and he sounded a little shaken up when he realized that the Joshua fight had been taken away from him at the moment, even though he still has to fight Tony Bellew first. So maybe if he wins that, a massive domestic fight between David Haye and Anthony Joshua could happen. That would be huge in the UK and Europe, and it would probably get a couple of viewers in the United States as well. Now, Anthony Joshua, I think that he can possibly beat anyone in the world as the thing stands right now. He makes a point of remaining humble and training hard, but I think the humble personality, it's just media training. I think that's just a show. I don't think he's actually like that. But you can tell if you follow him that he still has that drive. The only fear I have is that his ego might get bloated, and that could be his downfall. But let's see what happens against Vlad. Hopefully his ego won't get blown up and he will continue to destroy everything in the heavyweight division. Now, on the undercard, Dillian White faced off against Derek Chisora. Leading up to the match, Chisora had thrown a table towards White and a massive kerfuffle at the conference had happened. And everyone was saying that this was going to be an overweight hug fest with no action. My guess is people have never been so happy to be wrong. What a fight. Genuinely, this was a true modern classic and the best heavyweight fight since the 90s. As it stands currently in the heavyweight division, these guys are top level heavyweights. Chisora was motivated, and when he's motivated, he's a force to be reckoned with, as is Dillian White. The best way to summarize this fight was a heavier version of Gaddy Ward with a little bit less action. They just kept punching away at each other. Anyone could have gone at either moment in that fight. They both have granite chins, both are great inside fighters. Chisora has the big looping hooks and the body work. White has the short inside hooks and the uppercut and the great jab. Also a little bit more movement plus a longer reach since he's taller than Chisora. It was a tremendous contest that neither of them deserved to lose. It was non-stop action all the time. At any time, any one of them could have been knocked out, but they both managed to stay on their feet, and they both gassed out at different points in each round, and when one of them gassed out, the other one started beating the crap out of the other one. And it just changed like that. In my opinion, both of them were winners, even though White got a very tight and perhaps controversial decision. To me, boxing won that night. You could tell on the internet, like Twitter exploded. It was a Twitter meltdown. Everyone just wanted more of that fight. They wanted the second fight. It was massive. Also, Katie Taylor, who was in the London Olympics, she had her second professional fight. She dominated Vivian Obinoff in every round. She had Obinoff bleeding from her eyebrow. Obinoff actually kissed Katie Taylor on the neck during one exchange at the end. But the biggest talking point of this fight is the inadequate job that Obinoff's corner did with the cut that she had on her eyebrow. You could tell that it wasn't properly taken care of and they didn't even try to close the cut. Like they put some Vaseline over the cut, like above it, not on it. Something could have gone really bad if that fight had been longer. It feels like some people don't take women's boxing seriously, but here's the thing about a sport like this. If you don't take boxing seriously, male or female, people get hurt. So, her corner in the next fight needs to do a much better job. Now, upcoming fights. Jean Pascal squares off with Bosic for a non-televised event on December the 16th in Quebec, Canada. Then later on, Povetkin squares off against Stavern on the 17th of December in Russia. Bernard Hopkins squares off against Joe Smith Jr. on the 17th of December. And here's a big one. Badu Jack and James DeGale square off on the 14th of January 2017 in New York for a super middleweight unification, and it will be televised on Showtime. I think this is going to be a great fight, mostly for the boxing fans, and maybe even for some of the casuals. James DeGale, who's more in like fluid movements, you know, Muhammad Ali-esque movements, and Badu Jack, who just comes forward and breaks people down. So that's worth a watch on the 14th of January next year. Also, Carl Frampton fights Leo Santa Cruz on the 28th of January 2017 in Las Vegas. Mikey Garcia is on the undercard, and it's also being shown on Showtime. Anyone who knows Carl Frampton and Santa Cruz know that almost all of their fights are worth watching. Same with Mikey Garcia, heavily underrated when it comes to action in these fights. And there are obviously more fights coming up, but they're too far away at the current moment, like the Thurman versus Garcia fight. But when the time comes, they will be discussed. Now, moving on. So, football, or as Americans and I think Canadians call it, soccer. So we start with the Premier League, obviously. Manchester City played Leicester. It ended 4-2 to Leicester. Jamie Vardy broke his goal-scoring drought with a hat-trick, and King scored an absolute wonder goal from outside of the box that was Gerrard-esque. It reminded me of when Gerrard was in his prime and just banged in long-range shots from out of nowhere. Frank Lampard used to do the same. That goal was of that ilk. Kolarov and Nolito scored the two goals in the game for Manchester City, but unfortunately, those goals were scored too late. So, and now, I have a confession, I'm a big City fan, but the performances lately have been woeful, and it seems like the team is actually devolving. I wouldn't be surprised to see a headline that reads, "Breaking: Pep Guardiola launches shock bids for Sergio Busquets, Leonardo Bonucci, Manuel Neuer, and David Alaba after recent performances he describes as terrific, some of the best I've ever seen." Now, with that being said, obviously Leicester were playing great against Manchester City, but I don't think the results would have been the same had Fernandinho not been suspended, since he is the most important cog in the wheel that make Manchester City's midfield tick. And as many people know, the midfield protects the back four protects the goalkeeper. And if the midfield is clicking, the back four becomes less exposed, and there's less risk of the goalkeeper being exposed to a one-on-one or the opposition having a goal-scoring opportunity. Another problem during this match for Manchester City was that Kolarov left John Stones and Sanya too isolated and alone at the back, which exposed City's defense way more than it had the need for. There was too much lack of communication between the players, and it showed during the match during this result. It seems like the blueprint is becoming obvious for any team to beat City. Just sit back, absorb pressure, run towards the guy with the ball a little bit, hope that he fucks up or messes up, take the ball, long ball forward, score. And the conclusion from this game that I have is that Nolito needs to start. John Stones and Claudio Bravo, the goalkeeper, needs stricter instructions as well as more time to adapt to the league and the system that Guardiola wants to play, even though John Stones is English and is from the league, I think that the system is too much for him at the moment and he needs more time to adapt. Alexander Kolarov needs to be benched permanently. You can't be a defender of any kind in any sport if you can't actually defend. Also, new fullbacks are needed and they should be brought in during the January transfer window. The result of this game is a big problem for Manchester City because it puts a serious dent in City's title chances after the loss against Chelsea last week. But for Leicester, it's a blessing since it keeps them out of the relegation battle for a little bit longer. Fair play to Leicester though. They won the game simply because they were better. But there's something I've got to bring up regarding Manchester City and referees. Ever since Pep Guardiola said in a post-match interview or press conference that he doesn't understand the referees in England and the Premier League, a pattern has started to emerge. Every situation that's 80-20 in City's favor goes against them. But let me take off my tinfoil hat and move on. The other results in the Premier League this weekend, well, not all of them because this is recorded on a Sunday and some of the games have not been played yet. But there was, for the games that have been played while this is being recorded, here are the results. Watford beat Everton 3-2 with goals from Prodl and Okaka. Lukaku scored twice for Everton as well. Arsenal beat Stoke 3-1 with goals from Ozil, Walcott and Iwobi, and Charlie Adams scored the goal for Stoke. Burnley beat Bournemouth 3-2 with goals from Jeff Hendrick, George Boyd and Ward. Afobe and Daniels scored for Bournemouth. Hull City and Crystal Palace drew 3-3. The goal scorers for Hull were Snodgrass, who dived for a penalty, which he got and later converted to a goal. Diomande and Livermore also scored. The goal scorers for Crystal Palace were Benteke, Wilfred Zaha, and Fraser Campbell. So maybe now that Crystal Palace got a point and they're edging closer to being safe mid-table or bottom half, the speculation of Alan Pardew being fired will cool off a little bit, even though he deserves to be fired. Anyway, Swansea beat Sunderland 3-0 with two goals from Fernando Llorente, who you might remember from Athletic Bilbao and Juventus, and one from Gylfi Sigurdsson, the best player from Iceland ever. And for the results in Serie A, well, and Saturday's results from Serie A was that Crotone beat Pescara with two goals from Palladino and Gianmarco Ferrari, and Hugo Campagnaro scored for Pescara, but Pescara had also missed a penalty earlier in the game, and there were also two red cards in this game, one for each team. One for Capezzi and one for Aquilani. Lazio beat Sampdoria 2-1 with two goals from Milinkovic-Savic and Marco Parolo. Patrick Schick scored for Sampdoria. And there's Saturday's results for La Liga. Barcelona beat Osasuna 3-0, and the goals were scored by two of the usual suspects in Lionel Messi, who scored twice, and Luis Suarez, who scored once. Real Sociedad beat Valencia 3-2 with two goals from Villian Jose and one from Juanmi. Parejo and Zachary Bakali scored for Valencia. Yao Cancelo of Valencia was given a red card in this game and Carlos Vela also missed a penalty for Real Sociedad. Las Palmas and Leganes drew 1-1 with goals from Marco Livaja and also from Guerrero. Real Madrid beat Deportivo La Coruña 3-2 with goals from Morata, Meia, and Sergio Ramos, with Joselu, or is it pronounced Joselu, scoring the goals for Deportivo. Now moving on to, well, news. Transfer speculations. Because we're approaching a January transfer window. The Daily Mirror reports that Burnley are set to offer Joey Barton, who is currently without a club, a contract that runs up until the end of the summer. They also report that McCarthy might leave Everton because of his alleged unhappiness with manager Ronald Koeman. And it's being speculated that Fabian Delph might leave Manchester City for West Bromwich. And that both Manchester clubs are keen to acquire Danny Rose from Tottenham. It's also being reported that Arsenal are interested in Julian Draxler from Wolfsburg again. Look, I'm just going to say it. If it hasn't happened by now, it's not going to happen. Or it's most likely not going to happen. In other news, the Befuddled Podcast sends its condolences to the families of all the victims in the bombing in Istanbul at the Beşiktaş football stadium. Also, congratulations to the Seattle Sounders for capturing the MLS Cup. The Daily Mirror reports that Chelsea might face a point deduction after the incident against Manchester City, or what has been called the Battle of the Etihad Stadium, because this is the fifth time they have been charged over player behavior within 19 months. It is understood that Chelsea are aware of the threat of a points deduction and that they have asked the FA for a personal hearing. In regards to the football, or soccer as it's called, the following games have not been played yet. Chelsea versus West Bromwich, Manchester United versus Tottenham, Southampton versus Middlesbrough, Liverpool versus West Ham. That's in the Premier League. In Serie A, Calgary versus Napoli hasn't been played, Atalanta and Udinese, Bologna versus Empoli, Palermo versus Chievo, Torino versus Juventus in the Turin derby, Inter versus Genoa. And in Spain, Eibar versus Alaves, Celta Vigo versus Sevilla, Espanyol versus Sporting Gijón, and Real Betis versus Atletico Bilbao hasn't been played yet. Now, moving on to baseball. ESPN have reported that the Chicago Cubs have acquired Wade Davis from the Kansas City Royals. It's also reported that Chapman has signed for the Yankees. And that Dexter Fowler allegedly had a physical for the St. Louis Cardinals. And according to Twitter, Sale, or Sale, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, has gone to the Red Sox. And also, Bryce Harper has demanded a $400 million contract. Now, American football, or NFL, or football, or whatever you choose to call it. Lamar Jackson has won the Heisman Trophy, which, for those who don't know, is a very prestigious award, and the winner usually goes on to do very big things later on in the NFL. So we here at the Buffalo Podcast would like to say congratulations to Lamar. And even though he's just still a sophomore, the Buffalo Podcast wishes him good luck in the future and his future footballing career. The Browns and Jamar Taylor have agreed on a 3-year contract extension that is worth $15 million. The Buccaneers have officially activated Charles Sims III from IR. But he seems like a good player, and usually when an organization does this, it means there are good players that are being activated like this. I don't think that he will take any carries from Quiz, though, but I think he will most likely be third down receiving back or something like that. They have a plan for him, that's obvious. They wouldn't call him up unless they had an actual plan for him or how plan on how to use him. Also, I think people should recognize that if Buffalo beats the Steelers, which they have a big chance of doing, they have three games that aren't against great teams, the Browns, the Dolphins, and the Jets. And there aren't many teams that have a shot for the sixth wild card spot, or at least as good as Buffalo's team. And if Buffalo does get that sixth seed, they'll have to play the winner of AFC North or South. And that's not the hardest game in the world. I don't know if they could do a lot better after that, but they should be able to make a few plays here and there and cause some issues for other teams later on. College basketball. UCLA defeated Michigan 102-84. UCLA looks to have all the pieces fitting early on. If they can continue swinging upwards, they're Final Four contenders, in my opinion. It's good to see a dormant powerhouse wake up again. Love watching the running gun style they play with. Lonzo has that feel that you can't teach. Players just born with that kind of game. It's very cool to see how him and Leaf have breathed game into the program. Kansas defeated Nebraska 89-72. Lucas was back to the form he had by the end of last season. Now if he can progress from here, Kansas might have a go to going big when the time comes. Villanova defeated Notre Dame 74-66. Notre Dame are good, but Josh Hart is brilliant. That was some Kemba Walker level style of play. You gotta hand it to him. None of the highly ranked freshmen have been lights out, and Hart's playing out of his mind. Josh Hart has had 37 points and he was 14 out of 14 from the line. Brilliant game. Duke defeated UNLV 94-45. And now it seems like Duke are starting to live up to the preseason hype. When Allen, Kennard, and Tatum are on the floor, it's impossible to say who you should guard. And they dump it off to Jefferson, who is so damn effective in the post. And then Giles, he isn't even back yet. They might go on and do something this season. Wisconsin defeated Marquette 93-84. Not much to say, the referee was really bad. Wisconsin looked good in a faster game. I'm glad that Marquette responded to being down by 18 and coming back to a single-digit loss. But, it ended the way it ended, for a reason. Ohio State defeated UConn 64-60. UConn was playing this game with just 7 scholarship players, so people shouldn't have expected much. That being said, I never like to blame the referees, but they had a pretty obvious impact on this one. Ohio shot 34 free throws to UConn's 9. UConn was called for 15 more fouls. UConn was in control of the game until Facey and Brimmer got into foul trouble and they had to play the other 5 guys they had left. Props to Ohio State for taking their free throws, and UConn really needs to limit their turnovers. But this game should leave a lot of UConn fans with a sour taste in their mouths. Butler defeated Cincinnati 75-65. Cincinnati lost that game simply because they're bad as a team. Cal kept getting in foul trouble and making them play quadri. Come on, man. Wichita State defeated Oklahoma 76-73. Oklahoma either miss either one of Buddy or Isaiah. They have no knockdown shooter. Everyone is scared to shoot except Woodward. They can drive, but they can't shoot. Also, they get caught standing too much. That is something that Oklahoma needs to address. Once again, we would like to offer our condolences to the families of the victims that died in the bombing in Istanbul by the Besiktas Stadium. And congratulate everyone who's won a trophy or medal or competition within the last week. This has been the Befuddled Podcast, the sporting podcast, and I have been your host, Victor. And until next time, thank you for listening, and good night.